All right, guys, let's talk about Jägermeister. They could have written a totally normal ad here, like a really classic ad. They could have talked about their history, the 56 botanicals. It could have been all salesy and cutesy, but they know you don't care. Jägermeister doesn't want to be like all those other ads you've seen and heard. They just wanted to say two things. Jägermeister is great, but everyone has been drinking it wrong. Damn, that's cold.
Drinking it wrong? All right, if that's the case, how should we be drinking it?
They are so glad you asked, and so am I, Dad. I'm here to help you. Ice cold is the answer, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit to be exact. Ice cold shots of Jägermeister. That's it. That's all they want to tell you. So, wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends or at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York. Lots of things go better together. Hockey, food, golf, peanut butter and jelly, Gojo and Golic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., Claudia Bellafato, all out here in the DraftKings studio in Boston, as I think it was Teddy Bruschi that used to say, the day before. As we get ready for the 2024 NFL draft here. Lots to get to on that. We got a fun show for everybody today. As always, download, subscribe, rate, review us, leave us a 5-star rating. Check us out here live Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the DraftKings Network, our YouTube channel, the best of Gojo and Golic on VSiN, noon to 1 Eastern. Dad, you're already fidgeting.
Well, I'm just happy today I'm not going to get yelled at. I have a sweater on today.
Oh, okay, yeah. This
My wife
about,
is not going to be mad at me from the get-go because I had a T-shirt on yesterday. I said, we wear T-shirts on the show all the time. She said, if you wear a shirt that you can work out and don't wear it on TV. I said, I never worked out in that shirt that I had on.
It's a nice sweater.
Yeah, so I
It is a nice sweater. Shout out to the Republic of Bananas. They do a great job. Yeah. But this is one of those reminders. We all have a boss. Like, one of our bosses, Jeff York, was just in here. It was great to see him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you answer to a higher power, that being my mom, who is the only true decision maker in your life that matters.
The greatest thing that happened before the show is Claudia likes a picture, a group picture that she sends out on social media before the show. So she asked one of the people here to take the picture. And I don't want to throw anybody under the bus.
And
he takes the picture and gives the phone back to Claudia. And Claudia's like, well, that's interesting. Never really have we do a group shot and you take one picture. And then she just nonchalantly says, well, this one's not going out anywhere.
It's a good.
Oh, that's who took it. Sorry.
Yeah. You're gonna throw.
Threw Slate under the bus. Yeah. No, it's Hoff that took this picture.
I didn't say a name.
You know what? It's a good reminder out there, fellas, as we can give you some advice before we get to everything we've got going on this morning. Men, if you are ever asked to take a picture of a group, especially of a group of women,
Always. I mean, take a minimum of 10.
Without question.
A minimum of 10. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever taken less than 20, because I got news for you. You suck at this.
Yeah.
You're not very good. And so the only way you're going to win is with volume. And then you sit there immediately after. You hand the phone back to the woman whose phone you got took.
And wait
and you
to
ask,
see.
Do we need to do this again? Because your job may not be done.
And don't go low to high, right?
No, yeah. If you listen.
Don't go low to high. Is
taller guys like us, Dad, you got good natural angles.
Right, okay.
And you just start taking them before they actually tell you to, so you can get the candid. We can have a whole conversation, maybe do a segment on this someday. But we do have some football and NBA and much more to talk about. On the clock, Jordan Morgan and Steel Chambers will join the show. West Side Story, AFC and NFC West Draft Preview. And it's poll season, baby, breaking down NBA player polls. As I said yesterday, the guys now on the East Coast, they have to deal with these late games. Oh. But at least we got some dramatic endings for Game 2, guys. 2-0 lead for all three teams that got the dub. We got to give the respect to the Cavs. They were in there, too, with the win over the Magic. Nuggets and Knicks as well. Nuggets down 20 at the half to the Lakers. Jamal Murray missed 13 of his first 16 shots. And then he said, you know what? I'm going to keep shooting. His teammate said, just keep shooting. He did 6-for-8 in the fourth quarter. The most important shot, though, the buzzer beater. Jokic also 27, 20, and 10. And because Murray got the buzzer beater, nobody's really talking about that.
Quietest,
that's insane.
The quietest 27, 20, and 10 I've ever seen in my life.
Well, and you know what, Dad? The reason that's happening right now, because this Jamal Murray buzzer beater, no doubt going to be something that leads for a lot of people. Great moment against a great defender. Like the fact that this is against Anthony bleeping Davis, and he got that switch and said, oh, yeah, game time. I got this one. Shout out to LeBron James lying again, by the way, saying, oh, yeah, I knew it was good as soon as he let go. I called game for him. Classic LeBron James stuff right there. The reason all of this is going to kind of fall by the wayside is because every star player last night decided, you know what we're going to do? We're going to wake up and make game two of the first round about officiating. And that was true of the 76ers game earlier when we heard Joel Embiid and Nick Nurse and everybody there complaining about officiating. And it was true late as we had LeBron James and Anthony Davis both walking out of their press conference with emphatic mic drops because everyone at every turn decided, hey, this is about officiating. Anthony Davis getting in foul trouble right as Nikola Jokic starts to come online in that third quarter and really take over that game. In the Sixers game, the final 30 seconds were no fouls called on Tyrese Maxey as the Knicks get ready for the Dante DiVincenzo go-ahead. So, Dad, Adam Silver got to be waking up this morning banging his head against the wall because you had really compelling action that now is going to be, I think, largely overridden by a lot of the officiating conversation.
We'll get more into the 76er one because we're always talking about, do you call fouls at the end, let him play a little more. But this also involved a coach trying to call a timeout that wasn't awarded to him. But let's start with the later game first. And I had to go back to the old way when we lived on the East Coast when I was at ESPN on how to be able to see a game this late. I napped during the first half.
Yeah.
Napped during the first half of it. Woke up and watched the last quarter and a half. And I know we're going to – that LeBron complained about the refs, and we'll hear it. But you know what? They had a 20-point lead. They had a 20-point lead. You want to have some ref issues? Okay, I get it. But you had a 20-point lead you could not hold. Now, they've had leads against Denver in the past. We've seen that. They've played well. Game one, they were up in the first quarter. They were up in the first half. But it wasn't 20 points. This time it was 20 points. And as I woke up from my nap and started watching this game, it was about a 17-point lead. And you just saw chipping away, getting to the fourth quarter. I think 10 or 11. They were under 10 at times. You're like, uh-oh. Here we go, you know, and then that's exactly what happened. They chipped it all the way down to that game winner, which was absolutely incredible.
When in doubt, Denver has the ultimate get-out-of-jail-free card. They've got the ultimate break glass in case of emergency. Oh, things aren't going well. We're down a little bit. Can I interest you in the Jokic-Jamal Murray pick and roll?
Yeah.
Run that two-man game into oblivion and watch good things happen. And both of these guys shouldering the load. I think they had five guys in double digits overall. Christian Brown off the bench. This really only scorer for them in that regard. But when in doubt, you can always go back to that, and the two best players on your team are able to make it work in a way that few other people in the league can in that same circumstance. Jokic, especially, like that. I think the reason the Lakers are so upset about the officiating, obviously the call against D'Angelo Russell or not against D'Angelo Russell,
right,
and the use of replay was the subject of a lot of scrutiny for LeBron. But you look in the third quarter, that fourth foul call against Anthony Javis changed the entire tenor of the rest of this game when you're going up against another team whose guy's the big. Now you've got Rui Hachimura matched up with Jokic in the fourth quarter because you don't want Anthony Davis fouling out, and so he gets to go to work. And the minute you give him the opportunity to be the party starter, no matter who your player is, it's a John Donowski Duke lacrosse term, you got to have someone who can be the initiator and get that first win. Once you get Jokic a matchup like that on the block where he's getting him, where he's getting switched onto LeBron or any of these guys, he can now start to cook for everybody else and everyone, especially Jamal Murray late, more than happy to eat.
Jokic is amazing. His footwork, it looks so graceful and yet looks so dad bodish clumsy.
It's the weirdest.
Blows my mind.
The black tights, so there's always the conversation, Dad, you wouldn't really understand, neither would I, quite frankly, about swag around sports and the way that you have to like dress things up. Most other people wearing, like, you know, dark tights, dark socks, dark shoes, makes you look faster, all that stuff. You know, yeah. Booby Miles, Booby goes out there and gives it to him with black Nikes on his feet.
Right.
None of that applies to Jokic. Him wearing black tights and his pasty white upper body somehow makes everything look less athletic at the same
time,
but still very impressive. I don't fully understand how we're doing this with him.
But Jamal Murray is 9 of 24 in both games.
Yeah.
He has not been shooting well yet. You keep shooting. And as Claudia mentioned, 6 of 8 in the fourth quarter, started hitting those mid-range jumpers. And you hear the announcers in the game saying, you know, you got to start hitting something, whether it's a layup or that he was hitting the mid-rangers, start to make something to get your confidence back. Though I don't think your confidence is ever lost when you're a shooter like that. You just keep shooting. You just think you're going to make every one. So wrong statement by me to say to get your confidence back. You're going to keep shooting. But that last shot, when it cleared out and he's up against Anthony Davis and he does the little baseline mid-ranger over the outstretched arm, and you see the ball in the air, light go off, ball go in. Even LeBron knew the ball was in when it left.
Of course, LeBron always knows.
Well, of course,
LeBron predicting the future.
It's
the
exactly
meme
right.
Time.
But really, really incredible. But I'll continue. One thing I don't understand is the one foul that was called and then reversed. D'Angelo Russell got hit in the head. Mm. On a ball right by the basket as he was going up for a shot, and they Denver wanted a replay of it, and sure enough the foul was called off and Denver got the ball. And listen, the last, and anybody who knows me over the last couple of decades, I'm going to admit when I don't know something. I guess we certainly all don't know.
I mean,
everything.
It happens pretty often.
Yeah,
so
it's exactly
you
right.
You would have no other choice really.
So I get that he was hit in the head after the ball left the hand of Russell. So, again, it wasn't a foul there. But I don't know how you can hit somebody in the head and not be some kind of foul. I'm sure it will be explained to
last
me at some point.
Last I checked.
I know.
Listen, excited for this two-minute report that will change absolutely nothing about the outcome of this game or the feelings of the players involved.
Yeah.
But, hey, NBA, you did your job.
If I know you can hit somebody in the head, as long as it's not in the act of shooting, man, I'm going to go crack some people in the head. But, I mean, because he clearly got hit in the head. That was indisputable, right? And yet they don't call it, or they reverse the call, Denver gets possession.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though, when you said earlier, I don't think it mattered if that was called, you know, whether it was timeouts, I know we're talking Sixers or not. I think it's pretty clear with both of these that the Knicks are just playing like a harder team and more confident, and the Nuggets seem to be as well.
Yeah.
You also said the Nuggets, 5 guys in double digits. If you look at this Lakers game log, it's really only LeBron. 26 and 12, AD 32, D'Lo, but everybody else is, you know, 2 or 3 shots. Nobody's really facilitating with assists. The rebounds aren't there. So I look at this and I understand the Lakers got that big lead, which if you listened to me and said, look for the live lines, you could have got a great price on the Nuggets when they were down 20. I don't see how the Lakers can turn this thing around because of the talent of the Nuggets, the depth, but also just the confidence. Yeah, they're not the sexy, super athletic looking LeBron James type, but they're just the better team.
It is the better team. They look every bit like the juggernaut we've expected all along. We'll get plenty more on that and what happened with the 76ers last night as well. But we mentioned off the top, it's draft week around here. And this has been a draft defined in a lot of people's minds by beef. This offensive line class is deep. It is incredibly talented. And so for more on that, we're excited to bring in one of the best trainers, developers, scouts of offensive line in the game right now. Duke Manyweather, the founder of O-Line Masterminds, joining us here on Gojo and Golic. And Duke, let's start there. We appreciate your time. You know, you train and coach up some of the best offensive linemen coming out of college in the NFL. The O-line Mastermind Summit that you and Lane Johnson helped put on has become a staple of off seasons around the league. And so when you look at this offensive line class right now, what stands out to you overall about this group that's been so talked about in the lead up to the draft?
And I tell you what, first of all, thanks for having me. But this is a deep group, specifically at tackle and at center. I can't remember the last time where we were talking about maybe, you know, 8 to 10 names that could be first round guys in the first round in terms of tackle. And then you're talking about maybe 8 to 10 guys that will eventually be starting centers out of this draft class. And I tell you what, the guys that are slotted in there as guards are no slouches either. Overall, if you need an offensive lineman, specifically tackle and center, this is a great year to have a need. And I think that especially at the top of the draft, when you look at guys like Joe Alt and you look at Olufashanu Fuaga and some of those other guys, Latham, it's some really fine picks that teams can get.
So, Duke, you know, over the years in Mike calls games, I would call games, and we'd look at positions going from college to the NFL. And it seemed like the O-line was a position that had a lot of transition, the way the game was played in college to the way it was played in the NFL. So what has been your biggest adjustment you've had to help these players with from the college game to the NFL game?
Yes, that is such a great question, and there's a lot to it. I think we first have to look at how the game has evolved and how these defensive linemen have evolved. We're looking at these athletes that some have been, track sprinters, hurdle runners, basketball players. So we really have to change our mindset and how we change. How we train. The days of the, 6'8 and 365 and 70-pound offensive linemen, there's some of those guys still around, but you're starting to see the guys that can run and move a little bit, like your Lane Johnsons, your Teron Armsteads, your Penei Sewells, and all those type of guys. But one of the biggest things that we try to really focus on is just being in a great stance, being able to get the hell out of your stance, and then the hand placement. I think that is really what has evolved the most. These defensive linemen have been so good with their hands and swiping hands and all the counters that we really have to be strategic with how we're using our hands and be able to do everything, whether we're talking about a two-hand strike, independent hand usage, and sometimes it means no hands, just being able to physically put your hands on a guy and stop him.
So lots of going into that transition. You mentioned hands. I want to talk about one guy in particular that I know you know and have worked with, and Olufashanu, who the hand conversation came up with him. But in general, Duke, I think the conversation around him has been interesting. He's a guy that could have come out last year and maybe been a top five pick. And now this year is being talked about maybe more in the 2, 3, 4 range of this tackle group here. What do you see in scouting and training this player that translates well to the next level?
Well, I think in pass protection, he's a guy that's clean all around. He reminds me a lot of Tyron Smith and his ability to be able to set and use his independent hands. And the fact of the matter is when you turn on the tape about him, he doesn't give up many pressures in pass protection. I think that going into 2023, run blocking was an area for improvement off of 22. And I thought he did a really good job of closing that distance. I think some of his best games were against Michigan State. He did struggle a little bit in Ohio State just based upon the different type of edge rushes and how they play them. But I mean, he really checked the box in those regards. And you talk about the hands. There's been a lot of talk about his hand size. And it's funny because I think he's been aware of that. And it's kind of comical because you're talking about a guy that can trap bar deadlift and regular deadlift 705 pounds for reps with no straps or anything like that. So in terms of grip strength, the grip strength is there, And I think when you look at his pass protection and even the improvement in run blocking, there wasn't many guys that got off his blocks this year.
All right, listen, as a former D lineman, I have to say it. You get the grip strength because the O linemen hold all the time. So, I have to say it as a former D lineman. What is the hardest thing to coach out of a player that's going to the next level that you see them doing wrong that they need to fix?
That's a great question. And I think really what I've seen over and over again is when you get guys that overset or drift off the spot, so to speak. And we define the spot as really the junction point between you and the defender that really keeps the quarterback clean. So that's really where the fight starts. A lot of times you'll see that these guys really have no defined spot. And when they do, they kind of float off of it. They, you know, you got to be able to stick your feet in the ground and build your house, so to speak, that way you can get significant contact and anchor. You can't get to that spot and then the defender's shaking and you just keep backing up and retreating, or else you're going to end up in the quarterback's lap. So on the edge, I see that is an issue. And then on the interior, I think just going from college to the pro game, it's really getting these guys to understand that you got to put your hands on people because it happens fast. And I always tell guys, it's not so much about first contact. You can throw your hands quickly all you want. It's got to be first significant contact, first meaningful contact, which is going to either redirect or stop a guy's charge. You got to be able to stop a guy's charge, whether that's redirect force up or just outside a little bit. So for these interior guys, just getting their hands and feet synced up, that way they can get significant contact, because it's going to happen very fast on that line of scrimmage in the NFL.
Duke, we hear a lot about this every year. I've heard it with Notre Dame offensive tackle Joe Alt, where people were talking about him maybe with the Chargers, but can he switch over to the right side, making that move from left to right on the offensive line, making that move from the exterior to the interior? We've only got a couple minutes left here, but how difficult is that challenge for a lot of these guys that we're talking about as potentially moving from outside to inside or left to right?
I really think it's a person-by-person type of deal. And how I always look at it is, if there's some guys that are playing on exclusively the right side or exclusively on the left side, and you know, they've got some inabilities to open their hips and to not be able to stay square, where they're kind of typecasted just as a right side or left side players, those are the type of players that are going to really struggle to move to the opposite side. But then when you look at a guy like Joe Alt, who's pretty clean in his movement, I mean, check every box testing-wise. I said it before, there's not much of a projection with Joe Alt. You know exactly what you're going to get as an offensive tackle and an effective offensive tackle in the NFL. And because of that, I think he has the ability to move to the right or left side seamlessly, but it's going to take reps. It's not going to be a give me that, you know, you just throw him in there, he's going to be ready to go. It's going to take all the OTAs. It's going to take training camp. It's going to take the film study and just the reps of getting in his stance and getting out of his stance as a right side player, whether, you know, it's pass protection or run blocking. So I think it's just going to be an overall commitment to getting the work done. But Alt has the overall makeup to be able to make that switch, because he is so clean of an athlete, doesn't have many asymmetries in his movement, really clean mover.
And no one would know it better than Duke, the O-Line Mastermind Summit, the app, and of course, training some of the best and brightest out there. Duke, we appreciate your time as always, man. Enjoy this week. Best of luck to you and your guys.
Thanks, guys. And I'll see you guys soon at the summit.
Absolutely.
Hey, Dad, what do you do when you're out with friends, the waiter comes up and tries to take everybody's order, but the whole table freezes up and everyone's looking at each other trying to find some help?
That's a great question. So what should I do?
You should have some confidence, Dad, or as our friends at Jägermeister call it, shotfidence. If everyone's having trouble ordering, here's what you do. You take charge, you grab the bull by the horns, you find that dog in you, and you make an executive decision and just order for the table a round of ice-cold Jägermeister shots. Damn, that's cold. Because apparently, we've all been drinking Jägermeister wrong.
Did not know that. How should we be drinking it?
Glad you asked, Dad. We should be drinking it ice cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, that brings up other things that I love ice cold as well. And I'll tell you right out of the gate, that's going to be a candy bar pulled out of the freezer. That's my way of eating candy.
Oh, I love it. On the golf course out there, you get to the turn in the middle of the round there, and you get to that little clubhouse there, and they've always got the candy bar options, and I always see they've usually got a little box of them in the freezer, and it always makes it better on a hot day out on the golf course, taking a bite of that cold, cold chocolate and getting ready to go for the rest of my round. It's the same way with Jägermeister. So wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice-cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold.
And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.
All right, welcome back to Gojo and Golic. Draft week rolling along here, and we're excited to talk to a guy who expects to hear his name called pretty early, former All-Pac-12 performer at the University of Arizona, Jordan Morgan, kind enough to join us now. And Jordan, take me through how you're feeling this week. This is a dream that kind of got put off a year for you after an ACL injury late in the season in 2022. You were a guy probably could have had your name called in last year's draft. So what does it feel like to finally be here close to this moment?
Yeah, I mean, the wait is over now. It's finally here. It took so long for me to get here. But, I mean, I went through so much, went through that whole process and to get back, and I'm ready now. I mean, I've been anxious to hear my name, and I can't wait to see where I go.
So, like most when we were all kids, you dream of playing a professional sport. For us, it was professional football. At what point, though, did you know, I think I could play at that level? When did you feel that?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was a late bloomer in high school. So, I mean, I started varsity my junior year and then played on from there. Got really good my junior year of college. And that's when I was really like, oh, yeah, I could really hang with these guys and I could be a dominant player in the league.
I mean, and I think for you, a lot of people, you turn on your tape and you just see the athleticism that jumps off the page there. Mentally for you, going through an injury, going through an ACL, serious rehabbed injury, how long did it take you to start to feel like yourself again for someone that moves as well as you do?
Yeah, I mean, it took a while. It was a process. I mean, for the people that have gone through that, they know it's a process. It takes a while. So I'd say like halfway through the season, I really felt like myself and I really felt like I could move like I moved before.
How did it feel going through, you go through, you know, combine stuff, pro day stuff, but just those kind of drills of playing football and then preparing to do a broad jump or a vert or a bench press, you know, kind of away from football before you get back to football?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people like emphasize that, like, oh yeah, you're training to run a 40 this whole offseason, so getting on the field and doing football stuff is going to be kind of hard. But I mean, while I was training for the 40 and stuff, I was also doing O-line stuff with my guy AQ Shipley. So we're on the field after workouts and doing things on the field, the O-line stuff to get me moving.
So when it comes to that, what have you worked on with AQ as you get ready to make this transition to the next level? What has he kind of told you, hey, these are the things making the jump to pro football you really got to focus on at the line?
Yeah, so I mean, in the pass set, getting out of your stance really quick. I mean, the edge rushers are really fast. So I mean, getting out of your stance and getting set, getting the right time punch and getting your feet moving, keeping your feet active the whole time. And then the run game, just pretty much beat the guy to the spot.
What's it like reading all the things about you now? Yeah. I mean, coming out of high school and you're getting recruited to read all these really good things. And then all of a sudden, when you're going to the draft, you read some really nice things, but then they do weaknesses and strengths. What's it like reading some of those? Because we all know we hang on the weaknesses that people write about us, right?
Yeah. I mean, I see a lot of that stuff, but I just take it with a grain of salt if it's something dumb. And then, I mean, they're pretty much criticizing me. I like constructive criticism. So, I mean, I take that with me and I analyze my film to see if they're right and make sure they're really talking and know what they're talking about and then pretty much work from there.
So analyzing film, you mentioned working with AQ on the field. Have you watched guys in the NFL now? Do you have a couple of players, especially tackles, that you've tried to hone in on and maybe take things from their game?
Yeah, I watch Tristan Wirfs a lot. I mean, he's a really solid guy, really strong. I really try to emulate my game after him and really try to be the type of player he is. He's really patient, really good with his hands and his feet.
Are you some of the in your next jump? There are some that say maybe he might get kicked down to guard. When you hear something like that, what is your thought process on if you're asked to move positions?
I mean, it doesn't bother me just because I want to get those tools in my toolbox and be able to get that experience. And I mean, I'm not opposed to playing guard. I mean, as long as I get the experience and be able to be on the field with my team and play and win games with them, I'm not opposed to it.
And there's more than a few guys in this class that's chock full of quality offensive linemen. I think when people talk about the NFL draft this year, it's heartening for me as a former O-lineman. Beef is one of the first things on the menu. You guys, the wide receiver class. So in this crowded group of really talented guys, what do you think sets you apart as an offensive lineman in this class?
Yeah, so I think my awareness on the field. I mean, you see me pick up blitzes and stunts and everything, and my athletic abilities. I mean, the way I move, the way I recover, if anything goes wrong, if I miss a block, I can recover pretty well and stay on my guy. I could clamp people pretty well. I mean, I get my hands on you, can't get them off of you.
Your feet are your feet are fantastic. Watching you move without question. You grew up in Arizona, went to U of A, and now listen, getting drafted and playing the NFL is a phenomenal thing. But is there a part of you that says, hey, you know, the Cardinals, that would be pretty cool if I ended up with them, or does it not matter to you?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be really cool to play for the Cardinals just because a lot of my family's from out in Arizona, and it wouldn't be a long trip for them. I really have a really big fan base with the family out here. That would be really cool for me, but I mean, right now, it doesn't matter to me. Wherever I get drafted, I'll get drafted, and I love to play for any team.
Have you talked with, and I know, you know, he was someone you consulted a lot with making the decision last year, but making this jump, your former head coach in Jed Fish, obviously not at U of A anymore, but a guy that you spent time with there. I know you helped you and your family make the decision about coming back. What did he tell you either in the lead up or while you were still at Arizona about what this process could be like for you?
Yeah, I mean, he told me just stay on my P's and Q's. I mean, just work hard for everything I'm doing, like the draft process, the combine, the pro day stuff. I mean, just keep working hard. I mean, pretty much he told me just keep working my ass off.
Good advice.
So yeah. What are the plans for draft day for you?
Yeah, so I mean, we got a house here in Oro Valley in Tucson. And I'm going to invite the family, close family, really close friends, some teammates, and just going to hang out for the day.
Keep it simple, usually the O-line way here. It's not quite Joe Thomas going fishing, but, you know, going that same vein here. I'm curious for you, I mean, going back to this last year, we've talked a lot about, you know, recovering from injury, but being a guy who thought, hey, I'm going to go to the pros, coming back this next year, you get a chance to hone thing. What was one thing you went into this 2023 season really wanting to work on with your game?
Yeah, so I mean, after that injury and everything, it kind of switched my mentality to nitpick my game and find the flaws in my game from the previous season and things I could work on. So, I mean, in the run game, I worked on getting out of my stance and being explosive, getting out in the screens in the open field and getting those blocks for my guys. And I mean, in the pass game, just pretty much staying active.
So I know you mentioned Tristan Wirfs, a guy that you watched and looked up to the way he was playing. How about when you were even younger and you were watching the NFL? Who were the players then that kind of maybe inspired you?
Andrew Whitworth, for sure. I mean, I watched him a lot. He's really strong, really got good length and everything. So I really followed him in high school.
He's pretty much played your entire life, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, with something else here, man. Well, listen, Jordan, we know this has been a long time coming for you. Like we said, a dream that was sort of put off a year, but now it's finally here. So congratulations on all the success, man. Best of luck heading into this next step. We're excited to see where you land, and I'm sure whatever fan base hears your name called for their team is going to be excited too, man. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys for having me on here.
Thanks.
One fan base expected to hear his name is the Niners at 31. You can see here at the DraftKings odds, the under is juiced to -155 with the line set at 32.5. But as we always say, Gojo, sort of smoke and mirrors with all of these mock drafts. Would that make sense, though, you think the Niners are a good fit for him?
Yeah, I think we talked about this a lot coming off last postseason, Dad, seeing Brock Purdy get pressured a lot in critical moments and critical games during their postseason run, that offensive line would be a great way to go building, especially a guy with tackle flexibility as you get older and older in the career of some of your great players there. He could be a nice fit.
You see him getting kicked down?
He's one maybe you could early and then later on in his career move him back out. He's got that kind of athleticism. And in that 49er scheme where they want to get you on the run and moving a lot, I think he's a guy whose game could definitely pair well with that team. So looking forward to see where Jordan ends up. But speaking of the NFC West, coming up next, our pre-draft preview rolls along and we'll take a look at the Wests and find out whose names could be getting called for some of the best teams and maybe the best division in football next year. It's It's Kentucky Derby time. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? Saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action. New customers can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when they opt in with code GOLIC. Only on the DK Horse app. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 18 plus, 21 plus in certain states to open or access an account and a resident of a state where DK Horse is available. Eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See terms at dkhorse.com. One per new customer. Match calculated on first deposit up to a maximum of $250. Deposit requires two-time playthrough of settled wagers within 168 hours. Bonus released in $25 increments. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See terms at dkhorse.com.
Welcome back to Gojo and Golic. Yesterday, we discussed the major needs for the NFC and AFC East, and today we've got the NFC West. We just talked about the Niners. They get the 31st pick. Arizona at the top gets 4-27, Seattle 16, and the Rams 19. Adam Schefter said the Cardinals are in, quote, the catbird seat in his latest draft article, which we're going to need somebody to tell us what that means because I have no idea. But basically, he said they won't be looking to make a trade until they're on the clock. So, senior first, please, what does that mean, catbird seat?
Catbird seat means you're in a great position. Okay. They're in a great position to do nothing but draft Marvin Harrison Jr.
Okay.
This is a no-brainer. Okay, your leading receiver.
Unless.
Your leading receiver.
Maybe.
Your leading receiver was the tight end. Your next two leading receivers are gone.
Are sure.
Your wide receivers are gone.
Present some challenges.
Okay, you have Kyler Murray played 8 games last year. Now he's got an offseason of being healthy. Get going on that offense. Give him the best receiver in the draft. I know people think Malik Nabers. Either way. Marvin Harrison Jr., don't overthink this one.
Well, so
get him.
Hear me out on this.
Okay.
We're talking about a draft where there is a potential for four quarterbacks to come off the board very early
right.
in this draft. We're talking about a draft where a team like the Minnesota Vikings is sitting down out of range and could have to trade up if they want to get one of these guys, assuming the top three teams as they sit right now all could take quarterback 1, 2, 3. If they offer you something akin to what the 49ers got or had to pay years ago to get up where it's multiple first-round picks and a ton of capital for you later on for that spot to draft, and so you'd have a quarterback there, you'd be moving back within range to still probably get one of the big three wide receivers in this class in Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, or Malik Nabers, I feel like that's a call you got
to.
You always say you got
to
pick up the phone. And if
phone.
Someone's offering you three firsts to move up to that fourth spot, I don't know how you turn that down.
Well, you're absolutely right. You do answer the phone. You absolutely answer the phone. A lot comes down to, you know, as I went on that.
Oh, here
rant,
we go. Yeah.
Is what are your grades? If you have Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze close to Marvin Harrison Jr., then you certainly could think about something like that.
Or if you have them graded well and then also factor in, hey, if we're picking up another first rounder right. this year, a couple next year potentially,
no.
other picks that
that's
could help
fair.
You out here, that's what Adam Schefter's talking about. I think that's why the Cardinals are in. Any team that's got their quarterback situation settled, you're automatically in a position of power in this
league. You are. They
are. Because everyone else is operating out of desperation. We know that's why we're talking about six quarterbacks potentially going in the first round of this draft, because everyone else has to operate out of a place of desperation. So I think if the Cardinals get an offer that includes multiple first rounders and you're moving back to a team like Minnesota at 11, where you look above them, you'd have four quarterbacks going off in the first round. The Chargers, more than likely a team that's taking offensive line. The Giants are probably taking receiver. The Titans are probably taking offensive line. Atlanta, Chicago, like, you probably lose out on the three best receivers there. That probably would put you out of range.
That you
which
can't
would
do.
Be in trouble.
So I'll edit and say, make sure you don't lose one of those three receivers, as long as you have a good grade on all of them. If you have a good grade on
yeah.
all of them.
Well, and I mean, for all of those guys, I think anyone would feel pretty good.
And you know what?
That.
I know we keep saying if the Chargers stay there, it would look like Joe Alt. I know we'll get to the AFC West, but
They got rid of their two receivers. Now, Mike Williams is hurt all year. I get
they
it.
They did.
It wouldn't stun me if they went receiver either, so that would be another team taking a receiver.
I do think the one thing, and we talked to Duke Manyweather about this before, who, you know, the depth of this offensive line class, but the receiver class looks even deeper in a lot of people's
minds. It does.
And once
yes.
you get outside of the real top flight tackles, I do think there's a bit of a drop off. And so I think that position, you're right. going to see some of those people take the premium early on and go there. So Arizona, you would go Marvin Harrison Jr. there.
I would, yes.
I would say if you're going to stay there, yes, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the
But
easy
if you move
pick.
For another receiver, I'm cool. I get it.
Yeah.
Get
if it. If you get a premium from a team like Minnesota, who a lot of people have yep. slotted in for trading up for them, I think you got to pick up the phone and I think you got to take those picks because you got a lot of things you got to fix on that team still around your quarterback. Let's go Seattle on this one next down. 16th overall pick here. This is a team we know. Mike McDonald coming in, changing a lot of what's going on there. Dad, where do you see the biggest need? That defense?
Defense.
Something that Mike McDonald thinks highly of there, but offensive line also been something they've been rebuilding steadily in the last few years.
Defense has been bad. Defense is bad against the run. I think giving up over 130-some yards. This is an area I go. Whether you go with an edge guy or whether you go with an interior guy like Murphy, edge guy like Verse, something like that, I would look at the defensive side of the ball.
If Byron Murphy is available, yeah. I think that would be the home. Like, that's going to be the home run pick for anybody. Byron yeah. Murphy is becoming top 10 value in terms of the quality of the player. It's just a matter of if he's going to get taken off the board earlier than that by a team like Atlanta potentially at 8, by a team like Chicago even potentially. I think they'd probably go weapon, but there's a number of teams that could be in line for his services before that. I don't know if he makes it down that far.
I
that's the
either.
Home
yeah.
run
yeah.
right there. Troy Fautanu on the offensive line would be interesting because I think he's got a lot of position flexibility. You lost Damian Lewis on the interior of that line. You've rebuilt. You've got two great tackles on the perimeter that you had as rookies both together a couple of years ago. Injury is hurt there. And so Fautanu's got flexibility if injury pops back up. I think he's one. I'll be curious what happens with him. Coming off the combine, his stock couldn't have been higher. I wonder if Waters going to find its level again where, hey, Olufoshana, like we talked about before, could end up being one of the top guys taken there. Talisi Fuaga out of Oregon State, I think, is the guy that I would favor out of him and Troy Fautanu. And so if all of a sudden he starts to matriculate down, could that be a guy with that position flexibility as they try and rebuild things up front in Seattle? Could be an interesting one there. We're going to have the same conversation around the Los Angeles Rams, Dad, coming up at the 19th overall pick because defense overwhelmingly the need for this.
Yeah, just
right
three
now.
Picks later, cornerback was a thought, but they picked up a couple of cornerbacks in the offseason. So I think it now goes back to the D-line. A guy named Aaron Donald retired.
Yeah,
so you got
kind of a biggie.
You got a hole in the middle there. I can't imagine Murphy being there at 19. We just talked about him, if he would even be there at 16.
Sure.
Do you go Latu at the edge or Verse at the edge if they're there as well? I think it's somewhere on the defense up in the front.
And you had a lot of good young guys step up for your defense last year. Byron Young was awesome. Ernest Jones has been great for them at linebacker. Kobe Turner was a revelation at defensive tackle for them last season. But you need another hammer to throw on there. And so, yeah, Byron Murphy, like we said about the Seattle Seahawks, would be the overwhelming win. Latu Latu would be awesome here. Guy we've talked to on the show. As pro-ready a pass rusher
really is.
As there is coming into the league right now. Guy that might struggle a little bit more at the point of attack against the run, but if you're looking for someone to offset what you lost as a guy who's the tip of the spear going into your pass rush, that's a guy who can bend. He's got all the defined pass rush moves. There's a lot of that there. Jared Verse could be a little more stout against the run if he falls down to that point in time. So I think all of those guys fit in there, but defense really the overwhelming flavor for them. And then we talked about the 49ers a little bit with Jordan Morgan in the last segment, but 31st overall pick there. Offensive line, I think, becomes the big-time need. And for them, I really said along the interior. You look at that right side of the offensive line, too. I think right tackle or right guard, you've got Aaron Banks on the left side of that line that I think's developed nicely for them. And so Jordan Morgan, certainly a name that could be available there. Tyler Guyton, I don't think Graham Barton's going to be available this late in the draft. He'd be the guy, kind of like Byron Murphy. If he somehow fell, that's a value add for anybody who wants interior
Guyton's
flexibility.
Guyton's name's been mentioned, you know, as well with a few teams.
You don't
sound as sold on
Well,
him.
You know what? Guyton's going to be about where he ends up. I think, you know, inconsistency and effort shows up on his tape. He's a guy that technically needs a lot of help. Insane physical gifts, though. And the one thing about the Shanahan-McVay offenses, especially with Kyle and the 49ers group, is they want to major in outside zone, which is a guy who ran a lot of that as more of an undersized guy. it does sort of soften the edges on some of the technique that you need to be successful when so much of your offense is built off running, built off play action, built off all the weapons around you that can help mitigate that here and give him a great place to learn from there, especially with the tackle he'd be playing opposite
of. Again, a team that's in the Super Bowl, less holes to fill as opposed to Arizona, who we talked about at the top, where, hey, maybe take the King's ransom and drop back a few spots, still get a quality wide receiver and grab the assets as well. So teams in all different situations, looking like Arizona, San Francisco on the offensive side, Rams and the Seahawks probably on the defense.
And this is still the 49ers division, but I do think overall with what the Cardinals showed last year in year one with Jonathan Gannon, what this Rams offense should look like, this could sneakily wind up being one of the toughest divisions in the NFL this year.
About NBA, and as we said, the home teams continue to win 11-0 now. Knicks, Cavs, and Nuggets all 2-0 on the series. So let's talk about how these series prices have changed, guys, because over at the DraftKings Sportsbook, Cavs and Magic were a little bit closer to even. Now the Cavs minus 700, Knicks minus 450. You can get the Sixers at plus 350, and then the Nuggets just remain heavy favorites. I think the Knicks-Sixers is probably the one topic that we should dig into because, like Embiid said, well, he said, I think we're the better team. We will win this series. So now is the time to jump on the Sixers going back home down 0-2. But the question is, do you have faith in them, senior?
Of those three games we're talking about, I have the most faith in the 76ers. Embiid came back. We wondered how he would be 2 days off that knee injury when he went down.
That's a tough dude.
I mean, that dude just will not come off the court. He is fantastic. They had this game. I mean, they're up five.
Yeah.
With 30 seconds to go, and Knicks outscore them 8-0 in those last 30 seconds that we're going to get into. But I still think the 76ers, Maxey is. I mean, is he going to most improved player? Right. I mean, now this guy had been coming along, but my God, the year he had, especially when Harden left and then when Embiid went down. He's been absolute money. So I would say the 76ers out of these three series.
Tough night for the others, and that's always the biggest swing in these playoff series from road to home is your other guys stepping up because you look at Embiid and Maxey, 69 of the 101 points for the 76ers came from those two players. Only one other player in Tobias Harris was in double figures, and that was barely with 10 points. I have a lot of respect for what Joel Embiid is doing right now. I just want to say that point blank, period. I know Stugatz is sick and tired of Joel Embiid and all the complaining and all that stuff. But, man, knowing what he's dealt with injury-wise, seeing the load he shouldered, now late it gave way, right? We've talked about it. The worry is over time, does he get ground down? You see it happen in the body of these games where he starts off, they got out-rebounded on the offensive glass badly by the Knicks in game one. That was a big point of emphasis. They talked about it in the broadcast. They got called out in the film room. And that went early on, but late in that game, Joel just doesn't have the lift. And so Isaiah Hartenstein all of a sudden really makes his presence felt in that final swing where he gets the offensive rebound that sets up the Dante DiVincenzo game winner and then goes down to the other glen and is able to chase down Tyrese Maxey, who moves at a different speed than anyone else on the court.
Unreal.
It's the most insane thing to watch. He's mashed down turbo every time he touches the ball. But, Dad, we saw that late in the game, that effect of, hey, Joel Embiid just does not have that same juice at the end. And so that's why as the series shifts back home, it's going to be on these other guys on the 76ers roster to be able to fill it out at some point and give him some help.
And that's when it usually happens, when those guys get to home. So we'll see on that. Listen, the Sixers had a better field goal percentage shooting here, a better three-point shooting percentage. They made two more threes than the Knicks did. Again, they had the lead.
They did.
With 30 seconds to go.
And then that final 30 seconds, the ref decides all crime is legal, and the purge begins on the court there. And this is kind of the conversation we always have, Dad, because the 76ers complaining about the fact that they couldn't get a timeout at that point, that Tyrese Maxey looks like he got mugged at that point down in the offensive end trying to get the ball in on that same inbounds play. And the Knicks are going, yeah, hey, listen, this is the tough basketball we want to play. This is the conversation we always have around endgame sequences. Would you rather the refs swallow their whistles like they did there, let the players decide this the way they did and get this exciting ending, or do you think that was an obvious enough foul that they should have called it here and there was a mistake made?
So I'm gonna get to that, and I'm going to look somewhere where I think a bigger mistake was made. But Brunson, I mean, Last night, 8-29. Game one, 8-26. You know, again, not hitting a ton of shots, but he hits that big three to start this sequence, right? He hits the three. Maxi inbounds or gets the ball in the inbound. It gets stolen. DiVincenzo misses. Hartenstein gets a rebound. Dante then hits a three.
Sure.
And then Maxi goes down and gets blocked by Hartenstein. All the things that you mentioned. But in that series of Maxi getting the ball stolen on the inbound pass, I am one of those. I sometimes talk out of both sides of my mouth. What you call early, you should call late.
Not you.
But at the end, I'll say this because I've said this before. At the end of a game, players, and I remember being on the field, coming to the end of the game, the one thing we would always say when I was in that defensive huddle, whether it was in Houston or Philadelphia or Miami, if it's close at the end, the thought was that we would say this in a huddle, don't expect a call. Don't expect a call. Especially if we're a rusher, don't expect to get held or to get a holding call. Don't expect it. You got to play through it. So
players go in believing, hey, we're not going to get any help from officials.
If we do, okay. And if it's unbelievably egregious, obviously you have to call it. To me, the bigger issue was not getting the timeout.
Right. That one to me.
Now, that you could look at circumstances. The three is made. And as Nick Nurse said, if we don't get the ball in right away, we're going to call a timeout. But when the three is made and they're going to inbound it, the ref on that side, Nick Nurse's side, is backpedaling down the court.
Sure.
Because the ball is going to go the other way. And when the ball doesn't go in right away, Nick Nurse tries to call a timeout. Well, the one guy is under the basket watching and counting. The other guy is backpedaling to the other end. There's nobody supposedly to see it. And then when Maxi has the ball before it's free, they're trying to call a timeout. I think I have more of an issue with that of how do you not see somebody see they're trying to call. It's the perfect situation where you believe a timeout is going to be called.
That, like I said, that's the thing for me is like game cadence wise. We see timeouts called in situations plenty. As a referee, because I have sympathy as someone who was once the guest referee of the South Carolina Spring game, I like to understand the plights and the sight lines and the things that go into competent officiating in 2024, the year of our Lord. That being said, just like we grade players for the mistake they made not having their eyes in the right spot, that's one you got to be prepared for there because that's a critical juncture of the game. So I'm with you on that. And then as far as the physical nature of the play at the end, they're not expecting that. I do think you're generally right when it comes to that. I think most players we always hear would prefer it the way it went down here at the end of that game. And for us as an entertainment product, if you're a 76ers fan, you're obviously pissed off. But I think there's a lot of things that led to that moment.
Right.
It was a really exciting end of that game. It's everything we've always wanted about players being able to take this into their own hands. And that was the way that Knicks have defined their season this year, scrapping for it, finding a way to make that extra play, and ultimately getting the go-ahead there. So I don't have a huge problem with the officials swallowing their whistle there. I think, again, playoff basketball, we also think of, hey, this is an extraordinarily physical time of year, and so that's kind of what we come to expect. It's just a little bit jarring because I think in this day and age, we're so used to refs inserting themselves in those moments, that being a part of the discussion, that this is the ultimate you're damned if you do, damned if you don't reminder of how these situations go.
So now as it goes to Philly, let's see, because all five starters again for the Knicks in double digits. Does that happen in Philly? And for Philly, as you mentioned, obviously it's Maxi and Embiid, but Tobias Harris gets 10 points. He's the only one, only other person in double digits for them. So does somebody else step up there? So that's the shift that you look for when you shift where the game's
played. Yeah, I think the Knicks are ultimately going to win this series based on what we've seen so far.
But I see 76ers getting a couple.
Oh, no, that's the thing. I think this one can be the one that stays competitive and goes the distance because we've seen Philadelphia been in both these games, been winning this second game by a considerable margin. Embiid has been able to battle through this, and now they're going to have that couple days as the series transitions back to Philadelphia. And so getting that little bit of added rest for him as the role players get into a more comfortable role situation, to me, makes a huge difference.
And listen, me being from Cleveland, I love that my Cavaliers are winning. Sorry you're not getting the love. You're on NBA TV. It's a tough call. You're going to win that series. Congrats. I'm sorry we're not talking more about it, but you know.
That's showbiz, baby. Hey, we'll see you in the second round. Yeah. The Orlando Magic just running out of gas.
Yeah.
I mean, this is who Cleveland's also been the entire year, putting the clamps on people defensively, and we've seen no breathing room for the Orlando Magic. And so That is the extent of our magic coverage.
Yeah, sorry about that. Sorry.
On Gojo and Golic. Listen,
we'll talk Cleveland more in the next round, right?
We'll get them in the next round.
It's reaffirming what we thought about Cleveland and then sort of just quieting the people who wanted to give a lot of hype to the Magic, who are a good and talented young team, but I think that's just what it is.
Yeah,
the Magic Cavs getting here. Different. Fantastic stuff. Happy for Kevin Clark and the rest of our friends who are down there supporting the Orlando Magic. Love this for you. A building block. I didn't expect to look up during this season and see the Magic sitting at like the four seed at one point.
Yeah.
That's great. That's progress. The Magic finding a way to do this every once in a while off the backs of an incredible star player, and Paolo Banchero seems to be that guy for them. Awesome. We love that.
God, are they yelling at us right now?
Yeah, you know what? Sure. All handful of them. Coming up next, as we head towards draft weekend, let's take a look at more of the bigs coming up here and take a look on the inside. We've talked about interior offensive line, defensive line. Let's show the linebackers some love on Gojo and Golic.